Seekers, good evening. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. It is Friday. Thank you very much for joining us. Phone number here for future reference, 800-989-1480. I usually bust up on media in this country, especially news media, and rightly so. But Dana Priest's article about, or series of articles, I guess there were two parts. Was it Dana? Yeah, it was Dana. Her expose of what was going on in the wounded outpatient care section of Walter Reed Army Medical Center is a classic example of what investigative journalism should be, should do, and the results continue to come. The civilian Army Secretary resigned today. The head of Walter Reed Army Medical Center was fired. Actually, Army Secretary Harvey was fired. It continues to radiate out this investigation, and it's about time. This is what the writers, journalists, and television editors too, for that matter, should be doing: exposing this kind of corruption. Now, if they would just not stop here, you know, just continue. This is a good start. It's a good start because it is a critical subject: the treatment by this filthy Bush administration that veterans receive when they come back from Bush's filthy war. And I think what Dana Priest has exposed is, you know, I hate to use the cliche, tip of an iceberg, but that's about what it is. The House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform said it's issuing a subpoena to compel Major General George Whiteman, who was fired as commander of Walter Reed yesterday, to appear at a hearing Monday to testify about a controversial privatization effort at Walter Reed. Now, guess who was involved in the privatization effort? See, these criminals in the Bush administration believe in outsourcing everything, including the army, including war, including the treatment of our veterans. And any fool with the brain I don't know if what a salamander would understand that private enterprise doesn't give a damn about service. What they care about is profit. That's why medical care in this country is so crappy. That's why we rank like 30th somewhere in the world in terms of the medical. That's why we have 47 million Americans without care. So the treatment of our soldiers was being handed off to another connected Bush crime family company. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know how to, I don't know how to react to it. I really don't. I don't. Anyway, the House Judiciary Committee today approved the first in what is expected to be an avalanche of subpoenas to Bush administration officials. The story coming out of D.C. is that the Democrats are going to explore corruption and mismanagement allegations on everything from pre-war Iraq intelligence to the way the response to Hurricane Katrina was handled. The first round of subpoenas concerned these recent firings by the Bush administration of seven U.S. attorneys, some of whom were pursuing public corruption cases against Republican members of Congress. I hope the Democrats are going to continue to pursue this. Now, I want to get something. I want you to hear something right at the beginning of the program tonight. Ann Coulter, I Ann Coulter has some sort of an obsession with same-sex relationships. I'm not sure. She uses homosexuality as a club or a hammer. I'm always suspicious of people who do that because it calls into question what their, what are their motives. People who scream against drinking or alcoholism, in so many instances, are closet alcoholics. People who scream against child pornography usually have but occasionally have a tremendous collection of child porn. People who scream about the sinfulness of homosexuality are usually closeted homosexuals who can't deal with the fact that their homosexual feelings are perfectly normal. They've just been mentally beaten into believing that they're abnormal. And on and on and on. Ann Coulter seems to have a fixation, either that or she just thoroughly dislikes gays and uses homosexuality as a pejorative, as an insult. A couple of months ago in her nationally syndicated column, she suggested that Senator Hillary Clinton is gay. She said, quote, "I'd say that it's about even money on Senator Clinton coming out of the closet in 2008. She attacked former President Bill Clinton on the July edition of CNBC's The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch, saying that, quote, "he shows some level of latent homosexuality." She has labeled former Vice President Al Gore a total fag, her words, a total fag, on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. I don't get this woman. Well, I think I do, but she has been addressing, or she was one of the speakers at the Conservative Political Action Committee, a real collection of drones and freaks and right-wingers, neo-Nazis, that has coalesced around a whole list of right-wing screamers in D.C. And I want you to hear a couple of her comments. Go ahead, Kathy.
Oh, I also just wanted to say that it's ironic that when she got to the Q&A portion of her speech today, she said, "Oh, I'm not anti-gay. You know, the conservatives aren't anti-gay. We're anti-gay marriage, but we're not anti-gay."
Yeah, well, she's
but then she went on at some point to suggest that, a cute little girl in the audience who was a college Republican, you know, good thing that she was a college Republican because she couldn't find any heterosexual men in the Democratic Party.
I don't know what her problem is, except I think she's crazy. I think she attends these right-wing convocations because there's a chance, you know, she might get lucky. No, and I'm not trying to come across as a sexist idiot here, but I mean that. There's an awful lot of youngish Republicans who would be inclined toward that sort of thing with Ann Coulter. I think any adult male would stay away from her because of her mouth, of how vicious she really is. I can say the same thing about certain men. I don't see how Darren Kagan was able to date, quote, Rush Limbaugh. How do you date a pig? How do you do that?
She's not worth the climb.
Well, I want you to hear Mitt Romney and Ann Coulter here making total asses of themselves at the CPAC conference in D.C. today. First, Tony Snow addressed the dense dittohead drones at CPAC yesterday, and in the ultimate example of newspeak, he told the assembled morons that the Bush crime family had nothing to do with starting the war in Iraq. Nothing. It was that warmongering bastard Dennis Kucinich. Oh, somebody, I don't know. Too bad there seems to be no audio record of this bit of fun and frivolity. Well, anyway, this is almost better. Governor Mitt Romney, who thinks he has a snowball's chance in hell of becoming president of anything, introduces Ann Coulter, who then apparently attacks virtually all members of the Democratic Party and calls John Edwards, a faggot. And she calls liberals godless. What is up with this woman? Here's Romney, and then we're going to go right to Ann Coulter. Listen to this.
"I'm happy to learn also that after you hear me, you're going to hear from Ann Coulter. That is a good thing. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I was going to have a few comments on the other Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards, but it turns out that you have to go into rehab if you use the word faggot. So, kind of at an impasse, can't really talk about Edwards, so I think I'll just conclude here and take your questions. Thank you.
Unbelievable. I mean, this kind of stuff is astonishing to me. I don't know what's worse, her comments or the way these brain-dead drones applaud.
I think it's a lot of fun working on a campaign. And of course, if you're working for a Republican candidate, you'll meet some nice heterosexual guys.
What is with this woman? Now, not only is she weird where it concerns the whole gay issue, but she also is so typically of a white supremacist. Where it concerns race. I'm waiting for her to attack Barack Obama because of the parentage of his father. But she likes to refer to dark-skinned people in this country. What does she call them, Kathy? Our Negroes or our African-American? Huh? Our blacks.
Our blacks. Our blacks are so much better than their blacks.
And then their blacks. And this is a real degenerate psychopath. I mean, when you hear these little Nazis applaud this stuff, can you imagine something like this at a convocation of Democrats or liberals? Have you got that little piece of sound about her blacks? Go ahead, play that.
Our blacks are so much more impressive than their blacks. I mean, look at ours. We got Colin Powell and Condi Rice and Clarence Thomas and Michael Steele, Ken Blackwell, Lynn Swan. We have unbelievably impressive black Republicans.
I don't know if I've said it before. Had I been in this country born with African-American parentage, I never would have made it beyond about age 25. I would have been in prison, a mental institution, or dead from attacking that sort of rhetoric head on. Just head on attack it. Ann Coulter is somebody I don't get. I really don't. You know, I can say the usual stuff. She's just a psychopath. She's just a sick person. But she goes out of her way to be ugly and hateful. I don't know. And again, I don't know what's worse, the filth that comes tumbling out of her mouth, the racism, the homophobia, the anti-Islamic statements, just all of it. She is such a garbage mouth. And it's my understanding that when she's off camera, you know, the F-bomb comes out every other word. Of course, you know, so is Cheney, so is Bush. So there's no big surprise there. But what is weird is the way these young Republicans applaud her. And I don't mean catty. I don't mean to be catty here. But does the woman only own one dress? I'm serious. All she does is prance around. And it is prancing. Trust me. In that little black mini dress, and I don't quite get that unless it is being used as a lure, in much the same way that in Suddenly Last Summer, Sebastian used Elizabeth Taylor's character as a lure, if you know what I mean.
I've seen her actually in a long sleeve version and a short sleeve version, so there are at least two. you know, you feel like you open her closet, there would just be rows and rows of little black dresses.
All right. Well, you know, I don't want to get into that part of it because then you know, I feel icky, like I'm going after somebody because of their gender. I've said before on this program that I am a white American male of a certain age, and therefore I am a racist. I am a sexist. I do have prejudices and attitudes that have been ingrained in me from being a white male American all my life. And you know, the best I can do is struggle against it. That's all I can do is struggle against it. But my mind clicks over and over and over like a white male American when something like this comes up. And my first impulse is to attack her verbally. On a gender basis, on a rather than go after what she says politically, and so that's why I get uncomfortable when I say things like, "Does she only have one little black dress?" That's kind of a crappy ass thing for me to say, isn't it? But on the other hand, if that's all the woman ever wears, no matter where she is, I guess it's fair to ask that question. It totally detracts from her destructiveness. And the way she, like so many Republicans, Newt Gingrich and George Bush, how they just vomit and squat and relieve themselves all over the democratic process in this country and political discourse. It's just horrifying. We have a little surprise guest for you when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I was going to have a few comments on the other Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards, but it turns out that you have to go into rehab if you use the word faggot.
Yeah, that's the Family Values crowd. There she is. Jesus, God. Republicans are that way. You have to appeal to some straw man enemy in order to make them feel like they're part of a community. And that's sad. I mean, it can be anybody. It can be people of color. It can be people who are not heterosexual. It can be foreigners. It can be a specific other religion. It's one of those aspects of being a conservative, of being a Republican. That is so anti-human. It's really vile. And I think when the big revolution comes, I think people like white people like Ann Coulter will be some of the first that will be stacked as cordwood, and be totally forgotten, totally forgotten. But in the meantime, the damage that they do is just it's astonishing. Oh well, what are you going to do, right? I want to bring in somebody who's joining us from the studio in Phoenix right now. If you're listening in Phoenix, you know this young man quite well. If you've listened to this program when we've been gone, you've heard Jeff substitute for me. Jeff Farias, who has been with KPHX for, I don't know, how long have you been there, Jeff?
Since we started over Indian food. we didn't have a station. We lost our station. The next morning we started about scheming how to get it back. So I've been with KPHX since day one.
That's a very honorable history. I remember when that occurred, when the former station was bought by, if I'm not mistaken, a right-wing Dominionist religious group who couldn't stand liberal talk and immediately canned all the programming. And then the station came back, thanks to a lot of effort by a lot of people. A new station came online, and here we are.
So yeah, it's been it's been quite a ride, that's for sure. We're coming up on our 1 year anniversary, actually, early April. So
time just rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it?
No kidding.
Now the reason we wanted Jeff to come on the program is because Nova M Radio and KPHX has a change coming Monday. And I want Jeff to tell us what it is.
Well, they offered me a program. It's going to be called The Jeff Farias Show. It's going to come
why,
on the
why,
air.
Well, why are they calling it that?
Well, you know, we came up with a whole bunch of clever ideas. And they said, you know what, just use your name, idiot.
Sure. I think that's a good idea. I've listened to radio before where they call it like Middays or On the Track.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just come up with some ridiculous thing, but just use your name. That's
yeah. Well, I had a name for my weekend show, and that being somebody from Massachusetts, it was almost impossible for me to pronounce. It looked good on paper. It was called The Truth to Power Hour, but I could never really actually say it correctly because we're challenged in the letter R coming from Massachusetts.
The Truth to Power Hour.
The Truth to Power Hour.
It sounds like something that was on the radio in the 50s with Norman Vincent Peale.
There you go. Yep.
Well, I'm glad you got rid of that and decided to go to the Jeff Farias program.
Yeah.
That sounds really, I mean, right there, Jeff. Boom.
Right.
Now, you're going to be on what time?
I'll be on at 6 p.m. Eastern, and I say in Eastern terms because you're all about to change your clocks and we're not, and it's been the source of a lot of confusion around here. For 1 week I'm on at 4 p.m. in Phoenix, and then the following week I'm on at 3 p.m. So
you'll be on 6 p.m. Eastern. Oh my God, that means you're on and then it goes right into my program?
Yep. From
bring me lots of listeners, will you?
The reason I came on here, I was hoping you were going to do that for me.
No, wait a minute. All right, now explain something to me. If you have just a second here, Jeff, why do you all not have daylight savings time? What the hell is wrong with Phoenix? Is it just Phoenix?
No, it's all of Arizona.
It's all of Arizona.
Yeah, that's that independent Barry Goldwater spirit, I guess. You know, before I lived here, I lived in Indiana, which is the other mainland state that never changes their clocks. And it's actually quite a nice thing. You buy a clock, you plug it in, and you don't have to think about it anymore.
Well, somebody told me in Indiana, though, they move it ahead, you know, like 22 minutes in spring and then move it back 22 minutes in the fall. Not true, huh?
No, we're always a little bit behind the times there, you know.
All right, what's your program going to be like?
Going to be heavily caller driven. I really like talking to the listeners. We have a really well-informed crowd out there. I like to talk to authors and journalists. I like to talk to activists, not so much politicians because, you know, they're a little less candid, shall we say. A lot of emphasis on the activism, a lot of things that are going on there, how to kind of plug in, how to get involved, when the march is, all that kind of good stuff. So.
That's good. My good friend in Detroit, Peter Werby, has that sort of format, and I've never been real effective at that. I have a whole different thrust in this program, but I like to listen to that style of programming. It brings people who, as you say, the activist community out. I think Amy Goodman does that on Democracy Now!
Right,
and I think that style is that's a good style given the tenor of the times. As you know, my program is more about beating things into bloody masses rather than trying to find solutions.
Yeah, it's a valuable service you provide for all of us who don't have clubs of our own. So.
Yeah. All right, now, so this is starting day after tomorrow, Monday, day after the day after tomorrow.
Starting Monday, yeah. Yep. I'm just thrilled about it. And again, thank you for giving me an opportunity to come out here and let your listeners know that
they
can check it out on the stream at novamradio.com.
Anytime. Are you nervous?
You know, I was more nervous to do this than I am for the show.
Oh, really? All right, what's
it's a lot easier interviewing than being interviewed. It's
tell me about that. I've been interviewed a couple of times, and I sit there with sweaty palms and racing heart, and I think, oh, my God, I'd much rather have control of the microphone than be interviewed. Do you have any idea who your first guests are going to be?
First guest is going to be Elizabeth De La Vega. She wrote the U.S. versus George W. Bush.
Right. The one who came up with the impeachment, the original impeachment, articles of impeachment.
Yep,
oh, that's great.
And she just has a piece that came out this week on Alternet. Basically, her advice how to deal with how the White House should be called to account on the plame scandal. She's actually recommending that Waxman form a committee that investigates public hearings on the administration's role in outing Valerie Plame. So we're going to get into that a little bit, too. I got Tim Carpenter coming on later in the week, the head of the PDA, tying into that activist kind of stuff. And
that's good. This is going to be fun. This will give me something I'll definitely listen to the last couple of hours of the day before we go on the air. That's usually when I get into the heavy-duty prep work. And I like to put the headphones on and listen to something good. So that'll be much fun. I see nothing but success ahead for you, Jeff, and I'm real glad that you are you're going to be the lead in to my program. Just from, you know, it's not about me, it's about you. But there is the fact that what comes on before a program usually will help the program that comes on after, and I think it's a good idea. So it's great to have you as a leader.
Well, awfully kind of you, and look forward to actually, I don't know if I can officially say this, but we're going to be meeting sometime in the near future. You're going to come visit us in Phoenix, aren't you?
I heard a rumor about that.
There is some rumor floating around that you might be joining us for our birthday party. So,
as soon as KPHX can get enough money together to fly me out there.
we left a can outside, so it's been pretty busy so far.
Here, throw your nickels and dimes in here for the Get Molloy to Phoenix Fund. Oh, my God, not another
before.
One. Yeah, it worked before, right? Yeah. All right, buy a pixel. All right, listen, thanks a lot for joining us, Jeff. Jeff Farias.
Thanks, Mike.
Excuse me, this Monday, day after the day after tomorrow, Jeff Farias program on KPHX and on Nova M. So those of you around the country who are on the Nova M radio network who've never heard of Jeff, I want you to pay attention. The people talk about, where are the liberal or progressive programmers, people behind the mic. Hello, here's one. So do tune in 6 o'clock Eastern time, however that works out in Phoenix. I don't know, it's probably 3:26 in the afternoon. But 6 o'clock Eastern time, Monday, Jeff debuts his daily program.
And I just wanted to add that Nova M subscribers can also receive free downloads and podcasts of the best Jeff Farias program beginning Monday.
That's good also. What else have we got here? I'm still just stuck on that. Please play that Ann Coulter thing again. Go ahead.
I was going to have a few comments on the other Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards, but it turns out that you have to go into rehab if you use the word faggot.
Nice, Ann. Really nice. It's like Michael Richards using the N-word, huh?
I point out one thing that has been driving me crazy with the media, how they keep describing Mitt Romney's position as being pro-gays, and that's going to upset right-wingers. Well, you know, screw you. I'm not anti-gay.
No, not at all.
I'm not anti-gay. I just use it as an epithet, and every time I turn around, if I want to insult a liberal, I just call them a faggot. But I'm not anti-gay. Why would you think I'm anti-gay?
In the same speech, she makes reference to a game that was put together by New York University College Republicans called Find the Illegal Immigrant. Did you hear about this? The game, put, this is what college Republicans do. One volunteer was assigned to walk around the NYU area with a name tag that read Illegal Immigrant. And the first person to find the volunteer was supposed to win a gift certificate for an undisclosed amount. I don't understand this kind of putrid, mind-numbing. I do understand it, but I don't understand how this has a place in academia or in political discourse. What, in other words, what the heck is wrong with these people? Huh? What is wrong with them?
Gonna change, I can feel it.
I was going to have a few comments on the other Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards. But it turns out that you have to go into rehab if you use the word faggot.
And what must be noted here is the conservatives invite her to be a keynote speaker. They know what she's about. They know she's homophobic and a racist and a real hater, a world-class hater, somebody who spews this kind of poison into the minds, especially of the empty heads, I should say, of college Republicans. It's by design. It's by design. People are not born hating. They have to be taught. And Ann Coulter is a great teacher where it concerns this sort of thing. When is she going to start using the N-word? When is she going to start saying, well, you know, the other day I was walking down the street and I saw a Jew walk by. You know, I knew it was a Jew because he was carrying a bag of money on his shoulder. You know what? Gay folk can be slammed by an evil person like this. Who's next? But just keep in mind that the Republicans invite her to represent them to the youth of America. There she is. I mean, and to the not youth, you know, to the older people. There she is. And for Mitt Romney, what is up with Mitt Romney, for God's sake? Who is this guy? Why is he deluding himself? And because he's cute, does he think he can be president? Is that it? And he says that Ann Coulter is coming up next, and everybody just can't wait to hear her. Romney, if for no other reason, you just, you know, put a 45 caliber pistol to your head and pulled the trigger. That's it. Say goodnight to your presidential campaign. Oh, you may get a few psychopathic Republicans to vote for you in some obscure primary, but that's kind of the end of that. But to have as a keynote speaker a piece of trash like this who just stands there and makes these god-awful comments, is there no way that the woman can attack Edwards because of his stand, his political stand? Or go after the Clintons on their political stand? Or what about Giuliani? How does she feel about Giuliani, who's been known to dress up and drag just for the sheer hell of it? She doesn't like Giuliani?
No, she says when you've got both presidential candidates who are for abortion, there's something wrong with that picture.
What would she know from abortion? I'm serious. See, I'm not... I'm trying to walk this fine line. Yeah, I'd like to call her a psychopathic bitch, but I won't.
I kept waiting for another pie-throwing incident, which I swear to this day was just an anorexia intervention.
Is that what it was?
I think they were just trying to
force
feed
her. Trying to get her to eat it?
Yeah, something, anything. Like here, yeah. Swallow. Please swallow.
But this find the illegal immigrant, what is it with college Republicans? Is this fun? Is this fun for these people? I mean... Oh, my God. A 21-year-old NYU senior, Dave Hancock, a member of Students Creating Radical Change, one of the primary organizers of the protest against Find the Illegal Immigrant, said he found the game's premise offensive and racist. He said, this is a spontaneous coalition of campus groups, those of us who are opposed to this, that emerged to fight the offensive political event organized by Republicans. He characterized the game as a dehumanizing exercise in immaturity and said the protest against the game, the protested purpose in being there was to be proactive and stand in solidarity with undocumented folks. Another 18-year-old freshman said the idea of the event in general is disgusting. It really upsets me. I don't know how to protect our kids, our little kids, the ones that are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 3 right now, who are going to have to walk through this kind of filth from Republicans as they get older, who are essentially immature, they're cowardly, they've got to have an object to hate rather than an object to love, or a person to love. God forbid that should happen. They relish war as long as somebody else is doing the dying and the bleeding. I don't know. It's quite a job. If you have children or grandchildren, little kids in your extended family, how to teach them that there is evil out there, and sometimes it comes in a 6'2" blonde-haired frame draped with a black dress. It comes in all sorts of forms, doesn't it? Evil. Jesus, God, when I heard that today, I just thought, no. I got to hear it one more time. I got to hear it one more time. I really do.
I was going to have a few comments on the other Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards, but it turns out that you have to go into rehab if you use the word faggot.
Yeah, that's nice. Nice. You know, Michael Richards uses the N-word, and every conservative in America just, comes down on him like a ton of bricks. And rightly so. I mean, what is it about attacking people like that? I mean, what, I attack every night, but I attack people because they're destroying the country. And I attack them on their political point of view. I don't give a damn if Bill Clinton has a little oral sex in the office. I don't care if George Bush likes to honk up cocaine. I don't care if Colin Powell is a cowardly son of a bitch who graduated from field hand to house Negro. I don't care about that. But I will go after their political point of view. And as viciously and straightforwardly as I can. But to attack somebody's race or gender or sexual orientation or, I don't know, to hell with it. To hell with it. There's no point trying to understand this stuff. Come on, give it up, Malloy. All right, we're going to break here, and when we come back, we'll get into a real program rather than focus on... Well, Jeff Farias was real, that's right. Yeah, we did have a nice little 10, 11-minute break there. Got slime all over Jeff and me. I'm talking about this, but anyway. She'll be back. Ann Coulter, people like Ann Coulter never die. They, no matter how many stakes you drive into their hearts, they continue to plot around destroying anything that they can throw up on. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Phone number here is 800-989-1480. Senator Claire McCaskill, the Democrat from Missouri, first termer, called for the Army's top medical officer, Lieutenant General Kevin Kiley, to be relieved of duty. Senator McCaskill made the remarks after Major General George Whiteman, the medical center's commander, was relieved of duty earlier in the day, and they've fired the Army Secretary. All of them. Keep going. Don't stop there. Keep going. McCaskill said, it's clear that General Kiley, the Surgeon General at the Army, knew about the conditions at Building 18. The irony of this situation is General Whiteman stepped up. He's only been there a year. Kiley is to temporarily replace Whiteman, or have they changed that now? I don't even know if they've changed that.
I cannot wait for these hearings next week. I'm excited about it now. All the shakeups going on, there is something major going on.
I hope so. Now, next week, those hearings Kathy's referring to, Henry Waxman, the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, wants to ask General George Whiteman about a contract to manage the medical center awarded to a company that had documented troubles fulfilling a government contract to deliver ice to victims of Hurricane Katrina. Sons of bitches couldn't deliver ice, and the Bush crime family wanted them to take over certain services at Walter Reed. Why, of course. Now, the Pentagon has refused to allow Whiteman to testify. Waxman's staff has confirmed the congressman has issued his first subpoena to compel Whiteman's testimony. According to a letter from Waxman to Whiteman posted today on the committee's website, Waxman believes the Walter Reed contract in question may have pushed dozens of healthcare workers to leave jobs at Walter Reed, which he says in turn, Waxman says in turn, threatened the quality of care for hundreds of military personnel receiving treatment there. Yeah, I hope this filthy, vile Republican administration starts to come apart at the seams. And if it starts with Dana Priest's article about the horrific treatment given to returning veterans, so be it. God, I hate Republicans. They're just disgusting, just contemptible. And this comes under the heading, but aren't they all guilty? Aren't these the worst of the worst? The U.S. military announced yesterday it has sent home 2 Afghans and 3 people from Tajikistan. They were all detainees at Guantanamo Bay. The 5 men who were held at the isolated detention center southeastern Cuba without being charged were flown home early Wednesday and transferred to the custody of their own governments in their native countries. According to Navy Commander Robert Durand, they were cleared for departure by a military review process that assesses whether prisoners have intelligence value or pose a threat to the United States. The military does not provide details about individual cases, including the names of those released. But I thought they were the worst of the worst. They're all guilty. I'll bet you dollars to doorknobs that of the roughly 400 prisoners still there, maybe 6 could be linked to some sort of terrorist activity somewhere. And this is this is interesting. I thought this was against the law, but apparently it isn't. There's a female colonel. Well, here's what it says. Adding to the chorus of women leaders demanding that Bush retreat from the possibility of war against Iran. Oh, she's retired. Retired Army Reserve colonel and former high-ranking diplomat Mary Ann Wright asked military personnel to refuse potentially imminent orders to attack Iran. But I thought encouraging people to refuse lawful orders was illegal. I don't know. Former Colonel Wright wrote in a recent column published at Truthout, quote, attacking Iran will be a crime against peace, a war crime. Those conducting military operations will be violating the Nuremberg Principles, the Geneva Convention, and the laws of land warfare. While refusal to drop bombs on Iran may initially draw punishment and the loss of one's military career, those who refuse will save their soul, their conscience, and will prevent another criminal action in the name of our country by the Bush administration, end quote. How about that? Colonel Wright noted the large number of women now in the military and appealed to women military personnel as well as their male counterparts to consider the deaths of innocent civilians that will result if Iran is bombed. She went on to say, quote, we as human beings must take responsibility for ourselves and what our government may ask us to do, end quote. She served 29 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserves, rising to the rank of colonel. In March 2003, Wright was one of the highest-ranking State Department officials to resign in protest of the Iraq War. I remember her now. Yeah, okay. And Dennis Kucinich, Democrat, Ohio, introduced, when was this? A couple of days ago, H.R. 1234, a bill to immediately end the U.S. occupation of Iraq. Kucinich said, this is the plan that will get our troops home the fastest. It is workable and achieves the goals of ending the war and enabling our troops to come home. H.R. 1234 is a plan for the United States to use existing money to bring the troops and necessary equipment home and transition to an international security and peacekeeping force. Kucinich said, I've given more than 140 speeches on the floor of the House of Representatives speaking out against this war. Yeah. Oh, but the Democrats don't have a plan. You see, Democrats don't have a plan. No, we don't have a plan, you half-witted Republicans, to murder more innocent people. We don't have a plan to blow up more children. We don't have a plan to commit create more American war widows and widowers. No, we don't have a plan to deliver to 10-year-old Americans news that their father has been blown up by an IED. We have a plan to end this goddamn mess. That's what we have. Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know. You know, the lid obviously is starting to be blown off this Republican phony crap about we're the patriots, we support the troops, we're the pro-military party, God, guns, and Jesus. These resignations and firings are flying faster than pies at Ann Coulter's cadaverous face, and they're purging attorneys, district attorney, federal attorneys, scuffling around like cockroaches when the lights come on. This is one of the reasons it was so important to we all assume to get a Democratic controlled Congress. Now I realize I'm real impatient. I freaked out last night about the Democrats in Congress not doing anything. As a party, they're not. But individuals like Henry Waxman, who I think has been chomping at the bit to go after these rapacious bastards for what they have done, especially where it concerns the fraud, mismanagement, theft, lies, deceit, cheating, all this outsourcing crap that goes to partners in crime of these Bush thugs. The hearings, no matter who holds them, no matter what the topic is, the hearings will be hot. If you take a deep breath, in addition to smelling spring in the air and death from tornadoes, you might be able to smell impeachment, huh? That may explain the Bush flip-flop on Rumsfeld once the Democrats took over. Get him out of the way. Bring in Gates to look tough on past corruption. Now they can say, yeah, there were problems. We got Gates in there to fix them. Hey, leave us alone. Well, all the time being the designers of these fat government contracts and outsourcing of basic military needs. And meanwhile, they're hiding their war crimes, wait for it, against our own troops. These evil bastards. They really are. I mean, this is beyond political partisanship. These people are just flat out evil and should be removed.
I saw it was probably on Democratic Underground. I saw an interesting comment a week ago when the Walter Reed story was really starting to explode in the media, and they were saying, this poster was saying, that people are missing the point and the media is missing the point. The larger issue is, yes, the conditions were terrible, but look at how the Veterans Administration is trying to screw veterans out of their own legitimate benefits and claims.
Isn't that nice?
And I think it's a lot of fun working on a campaign. And of course, if you're working for a Republican candidate, you'll meet some nice heterosexual guys.
She just won't let it go, will she? Joe in Greeley, Colorado said, my college Republicans look up to Ann Coulter because she's someone who appears to know what she's talking about. Just listen to the tone that she says everything in. This type of stern father speak is what they look up to. Be it in the classroom or in the voting booth. They're never right, but they speak with the kind of authority that makes them sound right. People like Ann Coulter will always exist, so long as there are idiots around to listen to them. That's from Joe in Greeley, Colorado. From Teresa in Canada, she writes, Dear Mike, I'll never forget Ann Coulter's appearance on the BBC, CBC a couple of years ago. She told veteran CBC correspondent Brian Stewart that Canada, having fought with the Americans during the Vietnam War, let the U.S. down by not joining the Iraq adventure. When Brian Stewart, in his wise and gentle manner, informed her that Canada did not fight in Vietnam, she was unconvinced. Eventually, she admitted that Stewart was probably correct, but that she would have to research it for herself. Words fail me. You have to see the clip for yourself to believe it. From Teresa. This is from Sanchez in Montebello, California. Mike, Ann Coulter has always been like the anti-jester of the Republican Party, whereas the jester is the only one allowed to say the truth in comical form. The anti-jester is the only one allowed to spew hatred, racism, and vicious lies. You saw what happened with Macaca. Coulter always says what those rat bastards are all thinking anyway. Why do you think she's so popular with these idiots? And from Bob in Miami, when I asked what's wrong with these people, Bob writes, "Hi, Mike, I'm not qualified to perform an in-depth psychological analysis, but I have a theory that some people become addicted to the chemical changes in the brain resulting from allowing the hatred to surge through them. But here's a fact worth noting. There were so many clean, bright-faced, well-educated German citizens of all ages, so many of them young people, who were delighted to buy the hate-mongering and the fear-mongering, to jump on the bandwagon, to gleefully join the hate fest. Kristallnacht comes to mind. This is just another in a long list of identical parallels between the rise of the Nazis and the nightmare in which we've been living for the past 6 years. Wowee, pretty scary. Bob in Miami, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess there's no point in continuing to talk about it. Talk about Ann Coulter's like talking about Anna and Nicole, right? It's basically the same thing. It's just empty talk. All right, what else here? General Peter Pace, the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs, says the U.S. military capability is eroding. He said this a few days ago. He says there's a significant risk that the U.S. military won't be able to quickly and fully respond to another crisis. That's according to a new report to Congress. The report was classified. But a few days ago, senior defense officials, speaking on a condition of anonymity, confirmed the decline in overall military readiness. Bush and Cheney are putting the country at risk. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to remove these sons of bitches from office? Now that, you know, this too. And a report that accompanied Peter Pace's reveal concluded that while the Pentagon is working to improve its warfighting abilities, it, quote, may take several years to reduce risk to acceptable levels, unquote. Reduce risk. You realize what they're talking about. Whether or not the United States military is capable of defending the country. This is coming from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Oh, my God. Well, this is what Republicans do. They destroy everything they come within 10 feet of. They're vile, filthy, sick people. They really are. Okay, this is a letter I got from Beth in San Francisco on email, and I want to share it with you because, you know, I try to include as many emails as time allows, because some of you folks are very good in getting your thoughts down. This is from Beth in San Francisco. Dear Mike, just wanted to vent a bit about the state of our news media. I do not have a television by choice and instead get my news from several websites and print media. This has provided me not only a wealth of information I would never get in the mainstream, but it also spares me from the vapid drivel that passes as news. Today I went to CNN. There's a tragic bus accident that has everyone salivating and that will be in the spotlight as long as that silly hiccup girl was. But what struck me was the link that said Anna Nicole's funeral taking place, with a link to watch the damn thing live. I came back to CNN a little while later, and the link says Anna Nicole's casket moved to grave. I'm sure that if I check back in a moment, it will read Anna Nicole's casket being lowered into the grave. What in the name of God is happening to us? How does any of this blank pass off as news? There's more here. I didn't realize the time was coming up. I'm going to give you the rest of this. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Well, one day soon, that dam is gonna break, and it'll wash you away, it'll wash you away. Yeah, one day soon, that dam is gonna break, and it'll wash you away, it'll wash you away. The rain.
hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House to give you an assessment, first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
Where's that? Oh, that's right, Iraq. Anyway, back to this email from Beth in San Francisco, who's very upset about what she saw in the news today and how it really doesn't pertain to anything. She said she discovered a link at CNN.com, I guess, Anna Nicole's funeral taking place with a link to watch the damn thing live. I came back to CNN a little while later, and the link says Anna Nicole's casket moved to grave. I'm sure that if I check back in a moment, we'll read Anna Nicole's casket being lowered into grave. What in the name of God is happening to us? How does any of this crap pass off as news? Are we going to get weekly updates of the state of her decomposing body? As morbid as that sounds, are we really that far off? No wonder no one has a clue in this country. Most folks can't tell you where Iraq is. But, now we get to the bad language here. But blank blanket if we don't know what Anna Nicole has in the refrigerator on the day that she croaked. Blanking blank, Mike. I simply can't get over this. And the worst part is that the end is nowhere in sight. Mother Jones has an incredible spread about the cost of the Iraq war, both financial and human, that had me up until 1 a.m. reading. Another article was about the founder of Domino's Pizza and his insane project in Florida. He's building a strict Catholic utopia, complete with a college in nearby town where no contraceptives will be sold at the pharmacy, so this cloud god won't get upset. His cloud god. Did I mention that the article revealed that Jeb Bush declared the area as exempt from many laws and taxes, just like Disney World? Okay, so let me get this straight. Anna Nicole Smith, Britney Spears, Barack Obama's smoking habits, teenage bank robbers, and Al Gore's utility bills are what passes as news these days? Just checking! Beth in San Francisco.
She left off American Idol.
Well, but that's not news. That's entertainment.
It's treated as news.
It is. Let me see. Jill in St. Paul writes in, hi, Mike. This is regarding Mike Gravel, a Democrat from Arkansas. I'm displaying my ignorance. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. I've seen his name in print. I know he is a Democrat from Arkansas. That's all I know at this point. But Jill says, I too would like for you and all the progressive hosts to interview Mike Gravel, Democrat of Arkansas, who so far is running all but unnoticed for president in 08. I heard you leaning toward jumping on the Al Gore West Clark bandwagon, but I heard this man a week or so ago, and wow, does he have some great ideas. I want to hear more and get this man noticed. I've been for Obama since the 04 convention speech, but when I heard Senator Gravel, I knew I could vote for him if he can get heard. Hope you will help with this. Okay, check it out. Just Mike Gravel, spelled like gravel, G-R-A-V-E-L. And we'll do our homework, too. I'm just not, I don't know anything about Mike Gravel, except he's a Democrat from Arkansas. What else? This kind of caught my eye. Three young women accused of joining the Iraqi insurgency movement and engaging in, quote, terrorism, end quote, have been sentenced to death. This is from Baghdad. Provoking protests from rights organizations, fearing that this could be the start of more executions of women in post-Saddam Hussein's Iraq. The execution of the three, and then they list their names, and a fourth, are scheduled to begin March 3rd. That's what, tomorrow? According to a member of the Brussels Tribunal, all four are being held in the so-and-so female prison in northern Baghdad. And one of the three alleged terrorists gave birth to a daughter after her arrest, is still nursing the child in prison. A second is also in prison with her three-year-old, according to Amnesty International. Iraqis questioned in Baghdad said they believe the executions, if allowed to take place, would raise the level of violence across Iraq. They were sentenced to death by the Central Criminal Court of Iraq on 31 August 2006 for the 2005 murder of several members of Iraqi security forces in Baghdad. Both women denied any involvement. One of the women, the one nursing the baby, reported a claim that she was abroad at the time of the alleged killings. That's according to Amnesty International. It goes on here. It is not known whether the three alleged terrorists, quote, quote, will lodge appeals, but while this is possible, it is unlikely they will be successful. Many lawyers here are interpreting the death sentence on the three as an attempt by the Iraqi regime to intimidate insurgents. Two of those sentenced to death, two of the women, were accused of joining their husbands in their alleged crimes. Some Iraqis have openly expressed surprise and disbelief that these women could have been involved in any insurgency. It was a question of honor for Iraqi men that their women did not participate in any form of violence, they said. Independent lawyers have expressed strong criticism of the trials, saying they were unfair and violated international conventions. The accused were denied the right of legal defense. According to Walid Hiali, a lawyer, he was barred from representing the three in court. He added, no lawyer was given the opportunity to do his job. Jesus Christ. It's unbelievable.
So I just want to make sure I understand. In this great democracy that we've created in Iraq, you can be accused of a crime and sentenced to death and have no legal defense.
That's kind of what we have here now.
And this is this great constitution that we're
right.
lauding all the time.
Right. That's it. You can be sentenced to death while you are nursing your child, and the sentence comes down after trial in which you are not allowed a legal defense. This is why Amnesty International, obviously, is getting involved. Jesus. Great Hair wants me to tell the vets that they must appeal the decisions on their disability percentages. You know, when vets are asked for disability, they Department of Defense or somebody passes judgment on how disabled they've become. Great Hair says they must appeal the decisions on their disability percentages. They get so screwed if they are deemed to be 30% or less disabled. They get a one-time check and no other benefits ever. Only 10% of them appeal that first decision. If they are deemed to be 30% or less disabled. What's 30% disabled, according to the Department of Defense? Well, you have four limbs. If you lose one, that's only 25%, right? So what, you have to lose a limb and maybe half your skull. Would that make you 30%? I hate these sons of bitches with an intensity that I don't know. I really did think that once I passed the age of 50 that I could do away with things like hatred. You know, when you're young and you're trying to figure out up from down, left from right, black and white, red and blue. You're trying to figure out your place in the universe, and you go through those periods of ignorance where you hate or you fear or you this or you that. And if everything works according to according to the way I think things should work, you transcend your fear, you transcend your hate. Eventually, you approach transcending your bigotry. I guess that factors into fear and hate. You kind of transcend your, or you learn to outgrow religious claptrap. You outgrow or come to terms with the impermanence of your own existence. Yada, yada. All that stuff, right? Somehow, I thought I was doing pretty good with that until I got back into having to deal with someone like George Bush. During the 80s, I was enraged about Reagan and his thugs that are now, polluting our political system again. But I thought I got over it. In the 90s, it was easy to get angry at the Clinton administration for their incompetence. One of the things the Clinton administration didn't do, and I just read this, I forget where I read it. I will find it and credit the author because this is, I didn't think about this at the time. Bill Clinton was the first post-Cold War president. And he had a chance to kind of reconcile or bring about a truth and reconciliation about what happened over the past 50 years with the Cold War. He had a chance to drag out all the filth and the crap and the murders and the mayhem and the proxy wars that we've gotten involved with because of our competition with the Soviet Union. Bill Clinton had a chance in 1992. It would have cost him a lot of political capital. And that's one thing the Clintons will not do, is ever put their political capital at risk, even if the truth is going to suffer for it. But there was a chance. There was a brief shining moment when the Soviet Union disintegrated, the wall came down in Germany. All of a sudden there was a sense of, okay, the Cold War is over. Now, if we can just get out and expose it to sunlight, what has been going on for the past 50 years, maybe we can get over this. Maybe we can move ahead. Now, I'm sorry it falls on Bill Clinton. But he claimed to be, if not a liberal, certainly a progressive. He didn't claim to be a liberal, but certainly a progressive. His words, I don't think he's a progressive. But he was the first post-Cold War president. It could have been someone else. It fell on Bill Clinton. He dropped the ball completely. He went for the political expediency and to hell with history. Animals and birds who live nearby are nice. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more do you...
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All right, boy, do I feel like a jerk. Mike Revelle, he's from Alaska, not Arkansas. My bad, that's number one. He was a senator from Alaska for two terms, 1969 to 1981. And he is primarily known for having put into the public record the Pentagon Papers. He entered 4,100 pages of the Pentagon Papers into the record of his Senate Subcommittee on Buildings and Grounds in 1971. And he currently is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. Wikipedia.org is where I'm getting the information. And very interesting man. He also used his position as a senator in the 70s to block renewal of the military draft for the Vietnam War. So, Mike Revelle, sorry for the ignorance. I just I can't. Thanks to Craig in Boone, North Carolina, who explained it all for me, and a couple other people who wrote in about Gravel, Joni. Whew. Can I go home now, Kathy? Man. All right. Let us move to your phone calls, I think. Was I in the middle of anything? I don't think so. You know, usually by Friday night, I pretty much have gotten a brain that's working on three cylinders. But let's do some phone calls, all right? Can we do that? Okay, let's do some phone calls. I think that's a wonderful idea. Let's start with Julianne, who's calling you from Texas. Hey, Julianne, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Is this Julianne?
Yes, it is. Julian.
Julian. Okay, yeah. My bad. Jesus, it's going to be one of those nights. Hi, Julian.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember when the Mark Foley thing incident happened, and I was listening to Ann Coulter talking to Sean Hannity.
Yeah.
That was a real interesting conversation. But they were pretty much accusing the Democratic Party of being anti-gay because they were attacking Mark Foley.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, they weren't attacking him because he's gay. They were attacking him because he was chasing underage boys.
Right. And he was using his position of power to, you know, a typical a power trip situation that women in the workplace have been dealing with since there have been women in the workplace. Yeah, of course. But Republicans always lie, and Sean Hannity is one of the biggest liars on earth.
All right. You know, if you look at Ann Coulter really close, you can almost see her Adam's apple.
Well, I really don't care very much whether she is authentic woman or transgendered or a Boy Scout or, you know, somebody's great aunt. I don't care. It's what she says and what she thinks she can get away with and how the Republican Party is very content to use that kind of viciousness and then to see, it gives them the out. They can say, well, it's just one person's opinion, or they can disavow what she's saying. She speaks for the heart and soul of two right wing organizations in this country, the Republican Party and the Dominionist Christians. She
right.
speaks. She is them.
And, you know, and
so I guess the point I'm making, Julian, I really don't care about her sexual orientation or where she comes from. I don't know if she's a man, woman or a combination. I don't care. What I do care about, though, she presents herself as a woman who attacks people viciously because of their sexual orientation. Didn't I hear something in our crappy news media about one of the stars, was it Kathy, of that hospital show? He used the word faggot backstage at the Golden Globes, and he almost got fired from the Grey's Anatomy. Yeah, he almost got fired. He had to apologize, yada, yada, yada. And here this person stands up at a Republican convention of conservatives and just belts it around. She goes on network television and accuses anyone she feels like accusing of being gay, not because in the real world there's anything wrong with being gay, but because Republicans say there is. So they right. use it as a whip. And that's why she disgusts me. This person turns my stomach.
And no, and the Democrats are just too scared just to say, you know, it's okay to be gay. So the Republicans would just get away with saying this all the time.
Yeah, I know. It's really screwed up. Julian, thanks. I'm sorry I called you Julianne. I bet you thought that was kind of weird, didn't you?
No, I get it all the time.
Okay, all right, Julian. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in. Robert is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Robert.
Hi.
Hey.
Mike, San Francisco. Hey, the 9/11 Accountability Strategies and Solutions Conference just concluded last weekend.
In Phoenix.
And yeah. Yeah. And some of the very interesting things that people need to be aware of is that they need to have a clear vision about what it is they want to accomplish, because the spontaneous effortless fulfillment of desire is the function of intention and attention. And that's about wanting and being clear about what it is that you want, and then paying attention in your field of awareness to what's going to be coming up and available. And we have people, first responders, that have evidence that Dennis Kucinich and his wife, Elizabeth, want to get a hold of. At the go to Kucinich.us, uh-huh. First responders who were in the basement, saw the explosive damage down there and went and told their superiors that it's not all kosher with Building 7 mm-hmm. and the other towers in the complex, and they were told, if you know what's good for you, keep your mouth shut. That Cheney was running terror training exercises, the Air Force had going on, involving, hijacked commercial airliners and planes crashing into buildings.
Right.
And that, they were running a terror training exercise, a bioweapons terror training exercise, the WTC theme was. Everything about this, we've looked into it for over 5 years. Every place we look, it had to be an inside job. There's no way around it. And PNAC wanted it. So did, Zabinski. Zabinski, in his book, The Grand Chessboard, said a catastrophe on the order of Pearl Harbor needs to occur within the United States in order to galvanize the American people into an imperial mobilization, democracy being inimitable to imperialism. Now, when that shows up three times in a book, and this guy's on the CFR, Trilateral Commission, former National Security Advisor to President Carter, right. a real Washington insider, you have to pay attention. All these PNAC guys are schooled at the feet of the Zionist guy, Strauss, in Chicago. Who's
hey, listen,
Rockefeller.
Robert, I got a break here. All right? I appreciate what you had to say, but I got to leave it right there. Thanks. Spitfire sent me the column I was referencing. It's something by Robert Perry at consortiumnews.com, The Clintons' Real Trouble with Truth. And you should read this, consortiumnews.com, and it was something that Perry posted on the 24th of February, which would be last week. But the headline is The Clintons' Real Trouble with Truth. And I just want to share a little bit of this with you. Perry writes, Hollywood mogul David Geffen touched a raw nerve with Hillary Clinton when he told New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd that, quote, everybody in politics lies, but the Clintons do it with such ease, it's troubling, end quote. The Clintons' trouble with truth, however, is not just the petty political lying, nor is it their quibbling over what is or what mistake means. It's that they have never shown any real reverence for the truth. Too often they see it as something to be traded away for a transitory tactical advantage. If a future historian is ever to understand what happened to the United States in this era, how the world's greatest power so disastrously lost its way, that scholar should look back to the first Clinton-Bush transition in 1992 and 93, when Bill Clinton could have grasped a unique historical moment, but didn't. Clinton was the first U.S. president to take office after the end of the Cold War. He could have ordered a long-needed historical review of what 9 U.S. presidents had done, often behind opaque cloaks of government secrecy. The review also could have assessed what damage those decades of secrecy, propaganda, and deception had done to the core values of the American Republic. By revealing the truth, both the good and the bad, Clinton could have helped restore vibrancy to the democratic process by giving the voters the means to again be an informed electorate. Yet, even if Clinton didn't want to spend the political capital that creation of a Grand Truth Commission might have required, he still could have cooperated with 3 key investigations that were underway at the end of 1992. Special Prosecutor Lawrence Walsh was still battling the cover-up that had surrounded the Iran-Contra scandal of the 80s. Democratic congressmen were digging into the Iraqgate scandal, the covert supplying of dangerous weapons to Iraq's Saddam Hussein in the 80s. And a House task force was suddenly inundated with evidence pointing to Republican guilt in the so-called October Surprise case, alleged interference by the Reagan-Bush campaign in 1980 to undermine President Jimmy Carter's efforts to free 52 American hostages then held in Iran. Combined, those 3 investigations could have rewritten the history of the 1980s, exposing serious wrongdoing by Republicans who had held the White House for a dozen years. The full story also would likely have terminated the presidential ambitions of the powerful Bush family, since George Herbert Walker Bush was implicated in all 3 scandals. After winning in November 1992, however, Bill Clinton and the leaders of the Democratic majorities in Congress didn't care enough about the truth to fight for it. Heeding advice from influential fixers like Vernon Jordan, Clinton and the congressional Democrats turned their backs on those investigations. Clinton agreed to let George Herbert Walker Bush retreat gracefully into retirement, despite Bush's brazen attempt to destroy Walsh's criminal investigation by issuing 6 pardons to Iran-Contra defendants on Christmas Eve 1992. In his 2004 memoirs, My Life, Clinton wrote that he, quote, disagreed with the pardons and could have made more of them, but didn't, end quote. Clinton cited several reasons for giving his predecessor a pass. Clinton wrote, quote, I wanted the country to be more united, not more divided, even if that split would be to my political advantage. And finally, President Bush had given decades of service to our country, and I thought we should allow him to retire in peace, leaving the matter between him and his conscience, end quote. By his choice of words, Clinton revealed how he saw information, not something that belonged to the American people and that had intrinsic value to the democratic process, but as a potential weapon that could be put to, quote, political advantage, close quote. On the Iran-Contra pardons, Clinton saw himself as magnanimously passing up this club that he could have wielded to bludgeon an adversary. He chose instead to join in a cover-up in the name of national unity, presumably with the hope of some reciprocity from the Republicans when his own secrets might need sweeping under the rug. Similarly, the Democratic congressional leadership ignored the flood of incriminating evidence pouring into the October Surprise Task Force in December 1992. Chief Counsel Lawrence Barcella urged Task Force Chairman Lee Hamilton to extend the investigation several months to examine this new evidence of Republican guilt. But Lee Hamilton ordered Barcella simply to wrap the probe up. Some of that evidence, including an unprecedented report from the Russian government about its knowledge of illicit Republican contacts with Iran, was simply hidden away in boxes that I discovered 2 years later and dubbed the October Surprise X-Files. The Iraqgate investigation met a similar fate under the Clinton administration, as evidence of covert shipments of dangerous war material to Saddam Hussein in the 80s was ignored or treated with disdain. When former Reagan administration official Howard Teicher came forward with an affidavit describing secret U.S.-backed arms shipments to Iraq, Clinton officials went on the offensive against Teicher, bullying him into silence. Clinton seemed so determined to prove his mettle to the insider crowd in Washington as a guy who knew how to keep the secrets that his cover-ups of Reagan-Bush-era misdeeds were almost as aggressive as those mounted by the Republicans when they held the White House. And then it goes on, and I swear to God, you really should read this. I think Bart Kopp refers to consortiumnews.com as one of the most important sites on the Internet, if not the most important. And I come pretty damn close to agreeing with Bart Kopp on that one. But you should read this, and thanks to Spitfire for sending it to me. It's at consortiumnews.com, and the title is The Clintons' Real Trouble with the Truth. Everything was just deep sixed when Clinton took office. All the corruption that had gone on for the previous 12 years, everything was just swept under the rug. And look what happened. All these murderous bastards who were involved with mass murder in the 80s have come back now. Had investigations gone ahead, some of these rat bastards like John Poindexter and Elliot Abrams and Negroponte and Chertoff, some of these people would have wound up in prison, probably Pappy Bush. But no. Clinton decided to just close it all off and let everybody go. And, and I agree with Perry. What Clinton was trying to prove was that even though that he was not some hick governor from Arkansas, that he was a Washington player. How did the Republicans pay him back? When it came his turn to be hit with the scandal, the Republicans turned on him like rats on a corpse, didn't they? They just chewed him into pieces. That was the payback. So the fear now, what Perry is trying to say, and I think a lot of people who have been following this to a greater degree than I, are afraid that the next Democratic president, and there will be one in 2008, if it is Hillary Clinton, it'll just be another cover-up. It'll just be another turning away from everything. And that the Democratic Congress right now, although it remains to be seen if this is the case, that the Democratic Congress is not interested in peeling the onion, in pulling back and displaying what this corrupt sons of bitches have been doing to our republic, certainly for the past 6 years, most assuredly for the past 26 years, going all the way back to 1980, to the advent of Ronald Reagan. I don't know. Read the article. ConsortiumNews.com, Robert Perry's on the Clintons. It is worth a read. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to your phone calls. How about Scott, who is calling from Federal Way, Washington? Hey, Scott.
Roy, Mike, you just had to bring up the she-mail tonight, didn't you?
Now, come on. Don't go after what she says.
Well, it ties into part. Well, there's a couple of things with her, though. I think part of it, I think she's on something. I think she's on meth. And I think the other part with her is that not only she says things, but she panders to people, too. Because
yeah.
If you notice some things that she said, especially with religion, she doesn't buy into it. Because there was one interviewer that tried to corner her on her so-called because she didn't believe in Darwinism.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, what she was saying in her book in any way. And he asked her over and over again whether or not she subscribed to him. And she was kind of dismissing, well, there are other theories to it, too.
Right.
But
right.
She just uses it to pander.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, this is America, beginning of the 21st century. Some people will do anything for their 15 minutes, and Andy Warhol said everyone would eventually get. And I think part of Ann Coulter is exactly what you're describing. She's you can make the argument she's no more of a political ideologue than any other Joe or Jane walking down the street. She just enjoys the attention. And would do everything to keep it.
Plus, if you go back and look at some of her interviews from years ago, she wasn't talking some of the stuff years ago.
Really?
So I can guarantee you a lot of it is that she's pandering. And part of it, I think she's on drugs.
All right. Now, what you really called about.
Well, yeah, I didn't mention that. But what I was going to talk about was the I had emailed my senator up here, Patty Murray,
right,
about I was listening to the Tom Hartman show, and Scott Ritter was on there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he was suggesting that people do is write their governors and their senators about bringing up the resolution to be able to stop George Bush from using any more allotted money towards Iran.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I wrote her, and I got the email back, a response back, and I'm not going to say that I was shocked, but, you know, what amazed me about it was that the response was going on to the fact that there was concerns about Iran and about their doing their use of nuclear energy is more than just that and all of this stuff about this.
So in other words, she was saying the same thing Bush is saying.
Yeah, and this stuff about, well, the president was over there was talking about was he was denouncing Israel or denouncing the Holocaust and all of this kind of stuff. And what really surprised me was, now, she was one of the few senators that voted against the resolution in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I guess, and maybe I shouldn't say I didn't understand it, but, you know, why, what this was coming from in the first place. And it's, you know, it's like, and I wrote to her that, you know, this is imperative that we need to stop this. And it's like, you know, it's parroting all these other Democrats, and it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It really was frustrating.
Do you expect Patty Murray to be more open to the idea that we have no business doing anything with Iran?
I don't know
what her stance is on this stuff. And since she's your senator, one of your senators, I guess what I'm asking is, what sort of reaction did you expect?
Well, I would have. Well, I know that she's done, and I know that she's been a champion for the veterans and stuff, and she's done a lot to fight for their benefits and things like that. So I would have expected her to be more open. Plus the fact that she was one of the few senators that voted against the first resolution. So I guess I didn't understand this coming from her, that she seems to be buying into all of this stuff about trying to attack Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would have, and, you know, I don't know what's going on with these people in D.C. I don't. But I just kind of, I guess I could say it just kind of threw me for a loop reading it.
Yeah, well, I can certainly understand that. Again, I don't know Patty Murray's voting record, but like you say, if she was against the first resolution and if she has taken a stance in favor of veterans, you would think that she would be absolutely, utterly, completely, 100% opposed to another one of George W. Bush's murderous little fun wars. So, all right, we'll keep us abreast of it if you get any more response from her, okay?
Okay.
All right, Scott, thanks, man. Appreciate your call. Have a good weekend. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Left out? Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Give up my whole day's wages to get this hole in the wall. I call a holster that is empty, just a gun to the head.
26 before the hour.
I am a holy roller. I'm playing Russian.
I know y'all are tired of Ann Coulter, but I just want to go back to just because I got an email here during the break. But I really have a problem. I'll just tell you this right now. I really have a problem with people who go after Ann Coulter because she may or may not be a transsexual. I really have a problem with that. Ann Coulter, like I said earlier tonight, I don't care what she is. She's an evil person who is eminently attackable on the issues that she puts out there. Her use of the word faggot, her accusations that everybody but she can think of must be gay, and the fact that she uses that as a pejorative, as an insult, as a slam. She reveals an awful lot about whatever conflicts are going on inside of her. Now, I don't know if those conflicts come because of her orientation or just because she's a snotty, evil person. I have no idea. But there's so many people in the liberal community, I think, who are have no problem, and I don't get this, you know, attacking her or trying to diminish her because she may or may not be a transsexual. You better stop and think what you're doing when you do that, my liberal friends. Because that is not, as far as I'm concerned, that's like Ann Coulter talking about her blacks as opposed to Democrats' blacks. You see what I'm saying? Do you get this? Do you get this? I don't want to belabor this point, but, you know, maybe it's a teaching moment. There's an awful lot of liberals out there who, like I say, who are consider themselves liberal, consider themselves progressive, who don't quite understand the whole transsexual identity and how that comes to pass. You know, this is not a game for people to go through major surgical procedures, psychological reorientation vis-a-vis society, not vis-a-vis themselves. So many people who wind up going through the transsexual process knew what they were from the very beginning, but they were forced to exist inside a situation where they were not allowed to be the gender that they truly are. Now, you can agree or disagree with that. It doesn't make any difference. You won't experience it. Neither will I, unless you are transgendered. But from the people I know who have gone through or are going through this, it's really a difficult process to go through. Aside from the whatever surgery might be involved, whatever challenge might be involved here, There's also the fact that it seems like transgendered people are one of the few remaining areas that can be snickered at. And I think that this propensity to talk about Ann Coulter's Adam's apple and her bony knees and so on and so forth as proof that she must be a transgendered female, that somehow that diminishes her. No, no, no. It's her mouth. It's her mind. It's her evil, what she spews out, that diminishes her. It's her plagiarism. It's her illegal voting. It's her ignorance. It's her mean-spiritedness. But I'm just suggesting here. I don't mean a teaching moment. I'm not here to teach. But I'm just suggesting that people who climb all over this, Ann Coulter has to be a man. Look at her. She's a real ass because she's, think about what you're saying just for a moment here. Set aside her politics. Just see her as a human being. And I know that's almost impossible. It's almost impossible for me. I'm talking about a bigger issue here. You don't know how many transgendered persons you may know without knowing you know them or come in contact with. And again, my experience with secondhand, third-hand experience with folks who go through this is that it is an utterly, absolutely painful process. So when some geek like Ann Coulter, some poison spewer like Ann Coulter, frankly, I think she's just a woman. But when somebody like that comes along and is very easily caricatured as someone who is transgendered, please stop and think what you're saying. You're demeaning, and I know you don't intend it, just like I don't intend on being a racist, but I am. But I struggle against it. So struggle against this. Will you do this? Stop and think before you start with this, this business about, sex change operations. Stop and think what you're talking about. Do a little research. Find out just how intensely, almost overwhelming it is for people who finally make that decision, who realize they're not male or they're not female, and they are going to be what they are, and then what they have to do to get there. That's all. I'm not trying to be preachy here, but every time this comes up, and I get a lot of emails, I hear a lot of comments, I try to stay away from it because it's not fair and it's not moral. Ann Coulter is an evil spewer of garbage. As far as her sexuality or lack thereof or orientation or where she comes from or where she's going, once liberals learn to put certain things off the table, because they don't need to be there. They don't need to be there. You don't have to attack somebody's gender or orientation or surgical processes or psychological processes in order to show them to be total jackasses. You can just focus on what they say. Okay, that's all. And again, I'm not trying to lecture. Back to your phone calls. Garrett is calling from Houstonville, Kentucky. How do you say it, Garrett?
It's Houstonville.
Houstonville. Welcome to the program.
It's actually named after somebody. I don't know who.
Okay.
It's the kind of town that if you throw a banjo up in the air, whoever can catch it can play it. So I'm not from here originally, but I relocated here years ago. So
yeah, okay.
I called because you kind of dabbled your toes into the Dominionist murk.
Yeah.
And I'm a minister, but as I told your screener, who's a really nice guy, by the way, he doesn't get enough praise for being a really nice guy.
Who's that?
I think it was Ian. Was it Ian?
Oh, Ian. Yeah.
Really nice guy.
Oh, yeah. In addition to being an excellent radio engineer, he's also...
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's good at what he does.
Top
no
notch.
Question. Yeah.
But I'm a minister, but I'm not, as I told him, which kind of relates, these people have co-opted the word Christian to the point where I don't use it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a follower of Christ, but I'm not a Dominionist. I'm not a white-knuckle guy who,
Mm-hmm.
I believe, because I've actually read, funny thing, I've actually read and studied for, two decades and come to the conclusion that, because I wrote you an email on this earlier tonight, actually.
I may not have opened it yet.
But that's fine. basically saying, see, the secret to this whole thing is the Dominionists don't like Christ. And I'm not being flippant when I say this.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Because I've encountered it firsthand from ministers in the area when we moved here.
Right.
They came in to meet you, and they invite you to church, and they find out you're a minister. Oh, and then you start telling them the things that you believe. And say, well, this is what my studies have led me to believe. And you get just vile and hatred, and it comes out at you in waves.
Sure.
People that make Ann Coulter look like, you know, Little Mary Sunshine.
Yeah, I hear you.
And they don't like Christ. Christ is a inconvenient truth for them, really. Mm-hmm. Christ is something they have to deal with because they really follow the God of the Old Testament, who is a homicidal maniac, basically. And people say, how can you be a theologian? How can you say that? Well, because I've studied the Scripture.
Right.
You read Job where God says, if I don't hide the whole of the world from me, I will destroy them all.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's not really a nice guy.
No, it isn't.
And I guess having a kid mellowed him out because you try to make that jive with the New Testament, which is so revolutionary in the New Testament. Jesus talked about, hey, tolerance and love and get along and try to be a good example, but just live your life and be good to people.
Right.
And they talk, you know, the Republicans talk about they've waged war on the poor and the sick, which we would read as the meek. And Christ spoke that these are the people who you should take care of.
Well, you and I are on the same page, Garrett. I've talked about this many, many, many times over the past, 10 years that I've been at radio. I never paid much attention to it for the first 15, but that's because the Bible was not used, or Christianity was not used, as a lethal instrument, except for the past 10 or 12 years.
Right.
And the way it has been used has really been off-putting to me. But no, I hear what you're saying. I agree with you, Gary.
When Christ says, blessed are the peacemakers, and those are nonviolent.
Right.
And yet, you know, all we hear is endless war. We get
I know. The perversion of the message of Jesus has been it's been almost complete. And I agree with you. I got a break here. Listen, Garrett, I hope you call in again, okay?
Thanks.
All right, man. Take care. Take care. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And the battle's just begun. There's many lost, but tell me who has won. The trenches dug within our hearts. And mothers, children, brothers, sisters, torn apart.
Welcome back. About 10 before the hour. You know, I forgot to mention, I was going to do this Monday, and I didn't. By the way, the people who won the deck of Bush cards probably have gotten them by now. Y'all made such fun of me for using Tim Weisberg music. But I wanted to acknowledge Jerry Vasilitos, who came up with the deck of Bush. He sent me an email. I've got these seven decks left. I'm going to keep two, and I'm going to give five away. And Jerry's name is not on the shrink wrap or the deck itself. And I got an email from him later on that evening where he, or maybe the next day, where he's listening on the podcast. And he sent me a real nice email. So. The decks of Bush are in the mail to last Friday's winners of Name That Tune Malloy Style. And if you want more information about this, go to Jerry's website. He's got a couple, deckofbush.com and also chickenhawkcards.com. That's a good one, too, chickenhawkcards.com or deckofbush.com. And in the email he sent me, let me see that again, Kathy. He doesn't have that many left. He's a Nova M founder, by the way. He says he thinks he's down to about 100 decks left, but he does have plenty of those deck of Republican chicken hawks updated with a second printing. So if you want to see what those look like, and we may do another contest sometimes and use Jerry, Vasilatos. All right. We may use Jerry's, art again, but go to his website, deckofbush.com or chickenhawkcards.com. And again, thanks a lot, Jerry. We had fun with the cards, and I would assume everybody's got them by now, right? I hope so. Thanks to Ian Huff for engineering the program tonight and answering our calls. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, who is our senior correspondent, provides us with a lot of the topics that you hear on this program during any given week. Mark Marshall, who maintains our rather poverty-stricken looking website. We're going to have to get Mark to redesign it. We've had that in effect for I don't know how long. Thanks to the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board who keep things cracking and moving around. And if you haven't yet, please go to NovaMradio.com. All right? Sign up for the downloads and podcasts and a chance to win some bucks. All right? If you are not comfortable doing it on the website, you can send a check through the mail to Nova M Radio, 824 Washington, Phoenix, 85034. That's Nova M Radio, 824 Washington, Phoenix, 85034. And don't forget, Monday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time, however that translates where you live, Jeff Farias begins his program on the Nova M Radio Network. Don't miss it. Okay? Okay. All right, Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, one of the people who got their email read tonight. Hey, Sanchez.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, man.
Sure.
Hey, I want to be as concise as possible here and reflect back on the events of the week concerning how it's pertaining to Iraq. Most recently here, and you were talking about it earlier this evening, Dennis Kucinich's exit
yes.
strategy plan. I wish the man all the luck in the world. And, you know, I'm trying to be an optimist at this point, but it seriously troubles me that I don't know how well that's going to work. I mean, I've got to agree with Sarge. He's the number one man in our corner when it's concerning issues for the troops.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we got to be realistic about it here. There is no exit plan, mainly because we're not planning on leaving. The Bush administration has no intentions of leaving. How many bases are we building at this point? I think it's over 10, close to a dozen now. And they're building them like mad mm-hmm. with these super long runways for the specialty aircraft and everything
right.
like that. So we're not leaving, but God, I hope and pray that Kucinich, you know, rolls the ball forward with that. But man, what a week it's been here. I mean, you know, the scandal with Walter Reed is the most significant thing here, you know. But I was reading, because I'm still blogging over at soldiervoices.net.
Mm-hmm.
One of the significant stories that was going on is they're reporting now about the urban warfare that's been going on with the most violent neighborhoods there in Baghdad, where they have the surge troops now stationed.
Right.
And they're fighting under such squalid conditions. Oh, my God, no toilets, no showers, and I mean, under the roughest conditions. And they might as well be playing hip-hop music in the background because they're all undergoing drive-by shootings, just like they do in some of the urban neighborhoods. And they've got car bombs going off. These soldiers, they're trying to be grunts. I mean, they're trying to buck up and do the best job they can under the circumstances they're going through. But on our blog, I'm hearing from people saying that, like, the effect of the scandal at Walter Reed, the fact that, like, you know, people, they can't properly take care of veterans. They're cutting back the veteran benefits,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this goes to the credibility of the American government around the world. I mean, they're having conversations with their fellow Iraqis because they're stationed there in downtown Baghdad with the Iraqis. And when the Iraqis come to them and say, well, hey, man, you can't take care of veterans properly. And as you pointed out correctly yesterday, they can't even take care of Katrina victims. So how in the world are they going to be able to take care of things here in Baghdad? So all around, man, the credibility here is just crumbled over the entire week, man.
Oh, it's been a vicious week, and I know exactly what you're saying, Sanchez. It's been a horrifying week, and I have a feeling it's going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
The hearings that apparently the Democrats are going to conduct, I think it's going to these hearings are going to reveal something that I don't know if the American public is able to handle it, but we'll see. Listen, Sanchez, got to go. Thanks.
Have a good
man.
One, man.
All right, appreciate you checking in. And thanks for participating in the program this week, however you did that. I'll see you Monday night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm going straight to hell. Won't you come to
me? Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Like my mama said.